You know, I asked Bobby the books quite some time ago, and there's been no progress on it, and I'm thinking
What's that?
I'm thinking because there may be some entrenched prejudice against this, either at the producer level or perhaps at the executive level here. I don't know how to pronounce this, but I think it's an apitherapist, an apitherapist. It's A-P-I-T-H-E-R-A. You know, it's A-P-I plus the word therapist.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, this is a bee products. People have bee products.
Yeah.
And
why would there be... Why would there be any prejudice?
You squeeze out bee honeys and stuff like that, and you eat them, and you feel you don't get sick.
Why would there be prejudice toward that?
Well, maybe we just can't find one. So if you know, if you're out there and you know a good apitherapist.
Don't do that.
And somebody who's familiar with, because I read this article, and there's I don't know if it's connected, to the Connecticut Ox Owners and Drivers Association, but I believe there is a Connecticut apitherapist group of some kind.
Perhaps they're whipping bees, too.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is how are the bees,
the bees
appropriately treated? Exactly, Mike. One of my many
bees
questions.
Around in order to get more honey.
Exactly. Is anyone ever going there and just slap their little bees silly? Or I think, on the other hand, if you're going to get medicines and stuff out of them, you should pet them.
Yeah.
Pet their fuzzy little bodies.
You know, I think I have the answer to this. Since you have such a fine working relationship with the people at the Big E.
Yeah.
That you
they wouldn't know anything about that. If you can't fry
cultivate.
Bees and put them on a stick, believe me. Deep fried bees on a stick. Then the Big E, that would be the place that you would call. But sort of, Asian medicine based on...
Well, don't they have that kind of stuff, though, in the Connecticut building? Don't they have, like beekeepers and...
I mean, they're beekeepers. We need to talk to apitherapists.
Well, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, I suppose. Let's start to the trail. The trail of bee poop that leads back to the apitherapist. Good point. A little detective work is called for.
Yeah.
Maybe I will go up to the Big E. When does
that
start?
No, you won't.
Is it open?
I think it may be open now.
Is it over? I don't know. The truth is, for all of the bad reputation I get about the Big E, I would actually go up there of an afternoon.
You didn't just particularly enjoy yourself broadcasting.
Yeah, I didn't want to do shows up there. But I routinely would go up there with my son and sometimes with his friends and stuff, and they would go on rides. And
yeah, I did that last year. That was fun.
I would drink.
That might be part of it, too.
Anyway, so we have things to cover today. We have some guests coming up here, including Ross Joel, former TV personality here in this market. Now it's this company that...
Ross Joel?
Remember Ross Joel?
No.
Superman's father.
How long ago was that?
He was like a news guy it was like in the 90s, early 90s, I don't know.
Must have been before I got here.
Yeah, early 90s. And now he's involved in this company where they make movies of, they show you sort of movies of surgery you're going to have. I don't know why you would want to look at that, I don't know, but.
What?
Disgusting. Page one story in the current today.
Yeah, but why would you want to know that? Why would you?
Well, I don't know.
It's
sort of webcasts, actually. But basically, you look on the computer and watch a webcast. See, I don't know if I actually saw this coming or not, but I actually at one point had this idea back when there were sort of starting to be more and more cable channels that were just dedicated to one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
I did have this idea called the Operation Channel, and you would just sort of watch operations all day long, watch people's operations, and afterwards people would talk about their operation stuff. This is before all these plastic surgery shows and stuff like that. I just thought it would be just a channel where all you watched was operations.
And what made you think that people would want to watch that?
People will watch anything. I mean, I don't understand the things. It makes more sense to me that people would want to watch operations than that they would want to watch many of the things that they do want to watch. But in any case, that's not happening. But this company, whose name no one can pronounce, they're doing these webcasts, so you can actually sort of see, basically, the kind of surgery you're going to have and stuff like that.
Would you want to watch the surgery if you were Would you want? You wouldn't want to watch it while it was going on.
No, I want to.
Like, say, for example, if they were working on another part of your body.
I would want to be out. I want to be unconscious.
Actually look at the screen and watch them, whatever they're doing.
When I had my quadriceps snapped and they'd open up my knee and drill holes in it and, put the tendons back on and stuff like that, I was asleep.
Yeah.
And I had a wonderful time. I had a wonderful nap. I woke up happy and singing. And
until the stuff wore off.
Yeah, until
then you weren't so happy, yeah. Were you?
But I don't need to be awake looking at stuff like that. No, thank you.
Well, I wouldn't think it would be any fun watching something like that going on.
I don't need to be awake. I don't need to be watching when the Roto-Rooter guy goes into my toilet either. You know, I mean, I don't need to see stuff being done. You know, it's that the whole idea is yeah. There are other people who look at that stuff.
Well,
bad enough I watch 6 Feet Under. Oh,
you know, dig up the toilet might be kind of fun, but
no. But it's bad enough I watch 6 Feet Under, and you have to watch. I mean, there are always these kind of graphic scenes of people being embalmed. You know,
yeah, I'm sure that's a lot of fun.
Well, Billy last night when the guy was, well, never mind. It must be bad. By the way, the new TV season is kind of beginning. The early premieres are starting. Tonight, there's The Benefactor. Is that the Mark Cuban?
Yeah, that's it. Another stupid show.
Yeah. And then LAX is on tonight. Las Vegas is on tonight.
Las Vegas isn't new, though.
No, it's not.
It's only been on a short time, but it's James Caan.
Okay, it's that one. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what's really sort of interesting is every hack actor who ever lived is now back on television. I mean, it's almost impossible.
It's like baseball managers. It's the same thing. You know, they continually get jobs, no matter how bad you might stink at one show. Next year, you're on another one.
LAX does star Heather Locklear and Blair Underwood.
There you go.
Yeah. So
two giants of the industry.
So we're
T.J. Hooker and L.A. Law.
Yeah. So we're going to... Hey, T.J. Hooker was a great show, right? The critics never gave it a fair shot.
Right, exactly.
Speaking of critics, tomorrow we're going to talk to Roger Catlin, the TV critic for The Current. He's going to kind of walk us through or crawl us through the new TV series season. What we like to do usually is find the worst CBS product, since we're a CBS station, and then just give periodic updates on it. And you know.
Nothing, however, will top, I think, 2 or 3 years ago when the highly esteemed series... Wolf Lake
took
to the,
really
the airways.
That was the best. That was actually co-executive produced by Steve Dalhaney right here.
Right, exactly. That's what made it good.
Yeah, and it was canceled halfway through the first episode, I think. It was about a little town, where some of the people turned into wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them did.
Yep.
I mean,
not all of them.
Yeah.
Just and, some of them.
And only some of the town, too.
Yeah.
Didn't like get up every morning and turn into a wolf.
So as you can see, it was just a beautiful premise.
It was a great show. You know, we were really proud, anyway, to be CBS employees while that was on. So we're assuming that there'll be something equally stupid this year that we can make
that Jason Alexander show looks like it could be the one.
Now, I like Tony Kornheiser a lot. He's terrific. He was great on the radio, and he's a good columnist and stuff. But ordinarily, that kind of thing doesn't work. And they tried to do a series out of Dave Barry's columns a few years ago, and that was a disaster. So I'm assuming that this will be a disaster, too. We need Jason Alexander to be available, though, because we're working on a mid-season replacement show called The Alan Plotsky Show.
Right.
And it's a sitcom about a wacky ethics director who has a lot of people accusing him of bad ethics. And his staff doesn't like him. And his commission, which is full of political hacks, you know, appointed by the previous corrupt governor.
This sounds vaguely familiar.
They don't like him either. And Alan, played by Jason Alexander, has horses and they talk.
What?
We're kind of reviving the Mr. Ed concept a little bit.
Yeah.
So every night Alan
Mr. Ed and Alan Plosky all rolled into one.
Yeah, but he has like 3 horses, I think.
3 horses.
And, yeah, and the pilot.
And they all talk?
And they all talk, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
And they give him advice about ethics and stuff like that. Like, he goes home and he goes... What should I do? Because, like, you know...
Goes
like,
home. Wouldn't you have to go to work first?
Well, yeah. He would go to work for a little while, checks in, picks up his mail, has a cup of coffee, and says, gotta see my radiologist. I'm out of here. So then he goes home, and he says to the horses, I don't know what to do, because we get the situation here where the governor appears to have gotten somebody to buy his condo for a lot more than it was worth on the market, you know. So that one of the horses will go, well, Alan, how much over the market price did he buy the condo for?
Well, Alan.
I shouldn't give away too much from the first
even
pilot.
Even the horses know that isn't right.
Yeah, the horses know it's not right.
Right.
But they need facts before they actually make a judgment. So they ask a lot of detailed questions. Well, what was the nature of his relationship with the man who bought the condo? Was this someone who was going to be doing some state business? It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then eventually, the horses come up with, a plan for what to do.
Yeah.
Then Alan takes it into the office, And then whenever he's asked sort of follow-up questions, he doesn't know the answers because the horses are the ones.
I get
it. So now he has to have a phone installed in the barn so he can call the horses. From work. You know, if somebody asks
horses,
he doesn't know the answers.
From work. How, just out of curiosity.
I know what you're going to ask. I know what you're going to ask. Go ahead, ask it.
How would a horse answer the phone?
One of the horses picks up the phone in his mouth and holds it up for the other horse. See, I did know what you were going to ask. And then the third horse is in the background going, well, tell him about the other thing. Tell him about the other thing. The other horse can't get a word in edgewise.
Oh, God.
One of the horses, that other horse, the third horse, is going to be voiced by Gilbert Gottfried, who already have a tentative commitment from his people.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the plan. We're going to do a little sitcom. And if you have any ideas for a sitcom, or for an assault weapon ban or anything like that, give us a call at 522-WTIC. Oh, we forget to mention, okay, Ross Joel is going to be on a little bit later to talk about these webcasts so people can, watch probes going into other people or something. And then,
now, watching other people's operations, that might be kind of interesting.
Yeah. And then, we have this guy who's written a book called Change Your Underwear Every Day, which isn't, in fact, about Change Your Underwear Every Day. It's a history and a tribute.
Of underwear?
No, film strips. Remember film strips?
Yeah.
When you were growing up at school?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have those out in...
The history of film strips?
Yeah, film strips.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I think probably most... People, I don't know what the age cutoff point is. A lot of people wouldn't even know what we're talking about when we said film strips.
First, we're talking about talking horses and film strips.
Yeah.
Okay. What else do we have?
You remember film strips?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Quite well.
Yeah.
So what else do we have?
That's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, that's enough.
Or the president might be on to it. We're not sure. We haven't worked that out. What's his name?
For now, let's hope. 20 after 3.
The
That's the Hannah.
That's fine.
The Hannah, the folk singer band.
Okay.
And, you know, we have all kinds of crises unfolding across the world today, including Batman is on the balcony. Although, wait a minute. They didn't shoot him yet, did they?
Make sure that didn't happen.
Well, there was, something that moved across the wires at one point, saying maybe they'd shot him. But I think it was more the kind of thing where maybe what people do off diving boards, pretending they get shot. Anyway, Batman is up on the ledge near the balcony with the royal family. You know when you see every once in a while on Buckingham Palace, the royal family will come out and kind of wave and stuff like that? That's where he is.
How do you get up there?
Incredibly easy, basically. They have sort of fake superheroes up there all the time. This guy is actually, he's part of some group that thinks fathers don't have enough rights or something like that. This guy, when I was discussing this in the studio, there he is, he's calling. When I was discussing this in the studio, Mikey C. actually asked a great follow-up question. He wanted to know, which Batman was it? So was it the Dark Knight Batman, or was it...
I think it would really be best if we didn't give Mikey C. any more credit than necessary.
But anyway, I saw the video today on CNN, and he looked a little bit more like the Adam West Batman. The kind of slightly punchy Adam West Batman.
How would that exactly be pertinent?
It's just it was a good follow-up question on Mikey C.'s part. Okay. So was it the Dark Knight Batman or not? Anyway, the... this guy's up there, and apparently, it's unbelievably. Do you remember when the guy from the Daily Mirror? This was about a year ago. A tabloid reporter. He actually got a job almost instantly on the staff of Buckingham Palace, and he started putting rubber ducks in the bathtub and taking pictures of them and writing about Queen Elizabeth's bowel movements and stuff like that. And then an earlier royal embarrassment came in 2003 when a comedian dressed as Osama bin Laden. Gate crashed Prince William's 21st birthday party at Windsor Castle, kissing the prince on both cheeks. You see, this is a sign your security is not airtight.
Yeah.
You know, when a comedian dressed as Osama bin Laden can get in. So now we have a Batman, and he's up on the side of Buckingham Palace, using his tremendous skill as basically a board.
We'll follow.
Yeah.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Where are we going after?
We're not.
That's Batman.
Right.
Oh, okay. That's what you were trying to get my attention.
No, I wasn't trying to get your attention for that. Oh. I had no idea it was coming.
So, anyway, I actually have more information about this, which is that this whole this is what they do. They think fathers don't have enough rights, and for some reason or other, that makes them dress up as superheroes. For example, another member of the group dressed as Spider-Man on Saturday climbed up atop the 137-meter London Eye Ferris wheel beside the River Thames. And in another headline-grabbing stunt, one of the group's members spent 5 days atop a 120-foot crane beside London's Tower Bridge.
Exactly how is this promoting father's rights?
That's not clear to me.
It's probably not clear to anybody else either.
But I'm just thinking, you know, if sort of fathers dressed up in silly Superman costumes can get up on the balcony of Buckingham Palace,
yeah.
If Al-Qaeda took a crack at this, I'm assuming, you know, they could do a little better.
I would think.
Yeah. So maybe it's time, you know. Maybe it's time to give those beef eaters a little, you know, something with a little punch to it. Anyway, so we have all of that coming up here. Hannah, the folk singer, will be
due.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was a nice event, but there just weren't that many people there, you know? And, I mean, there were great musicians playing, and there were tables set up with every piece and worker solidarity and, you know, animal rights vegetarian organization for miles around.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't just sort of immediately go popping out into the streets for something like that anymore. I don't know why that is.
Are they afraid?
Maybe they are, or it's just...
Yeah, because that could be unpatriotic.
Yeah, that's true.
That could be un-American.
Yeah.
That could be un-American.
Crews are waiting outside for these two, I can tell you right now.
Sure.
They'll be leaving here in...
Don't worry. Sherwood knows the Farmington police very well, so there shouldn't be any trouble.
We have a back door.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it is fear. You think it might be? Yeah.
I don't go because I'm afraid that I'll be put on a list.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
See, I'm already on a list.
Yeah.
So that's a different list.
I went without fear.
I think we don't say certain things at our shows because we're scared we'll get kicked out and from the bar owner.
That's so sad. Or
yeah.
you're afraid you're going to be like Linda Ronstadt or something like that, you know?
Completely.
Yeah.
I mean, this year, it seems like it's just started this year. I used to say whatever I wanted, but,
yeah.
You know?
That's so sad. Well, you know, I mean, I can't tell people what to do, but it seems like if we all take the opposite attitude when we do whatever we want, there'll be too many of us. They can't monitor everybody. But maybe you're right. Maybe people are just afraid to go to that kind of stuff. And I think also somehow, like, you know, somehow it's almost not fashionable or something. It's something that the socially conscious kids on college campuses do, but they don't really represent anything close to a majority.
Let's have an assault weapons rally.
Oh, please.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, you'd pack the place.
American mass culture is an assault weapons rally.
It's hard to make video games with peace as a...
That's true.
Yeah.
Now, there were a couple of Warren Christopher video games, but they weren't popular. he wasn't as popular as Lara Croft. I noticed that right away, the Warren Christopher video game.
Warren Christopher Tomb Raider, doesn't it? You know, it doesn't sound the same.
But I just sort of keep waiting for that to happen. I keep waiting to go to Bushland Park for one of these things, and there'd be like 5,000 people, like these two talented young people, all out there kind of, you know... Feeling the feeling. I mean, I guess we saw that in New York City at the beginning of the Republican National Convention. There were hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people there. But it just doesn't... It seems like people are afraid to talk that talk. And that's sad. I mean, it's sad that you guys... can I ask roughly how old you guys are? You don't have to give me your exact ages if you don't
want to. I'm 27.
I'm 38.
Yeah. Well, you're almost as old as we are. You're not...
Not even quite close. What do you mean almost as old as we are?
Well, what am I? I'm 41, 42, something.
No, I don't think so. It's not last I checked.
Well, it's sad that anybody has to feel that way, and it's sad that anybody has to feel that they can't speak their mind in this country, because, I mean, that's the whole point, really. I mean, it's
what we're fighting for.
Yeah. Well, it's a great song, and I hope peace catches on and becomes more fashionable at some point.
Us too.
You know, I don't know what else. I mean, actually, every Saturday... If you drive through West Hartford Center, there's a whole bunch of people on the green in West Hartford Center holding up peace signs and stuff like that. They're on this sort of little side green and asking people to honk if they agree and stuff like that. But what's interesting is they're all older than I am. I know most of them, you know, and they're all, you know, people in their 50s and 60s and 70s, you know, who sort of remember a time when it was an okay thing to do and there was no real risk associated with it. And maybe there is a risk associated with it now, but for those of us who are, I mean, you know, Bruce and I are at an age where we're just basically marking time until death. So it's not that, you know, it's not like our bright futures could be snatched away from us if we said the wrong thing.
Yeah, because the words bright and future.
It's all over.
Just forget it.
Just playing out the string here, trying to get to the finish line.
It's not quite that bad.
Well, it's
close.
For rhetorical purposes, it is anyway. And I guess I just don't even ever really think about what it's like to be young and to kind of wonder what it actually means. But, you know, maybe if we all sing songs like that one and exercise our rights and stuff like that, we'll... I don't know, there was this guy there yesterday. You remember the guy who called up and he said, He said he had written a song called God Please Take Bush or something like that. And I said, maybe I wouldn't be playing that.
Yeah.
Even I draw the line somewhere.
Yeah.
He was there yesterday bugging me. He said, you got to be more courageous. You got to be more gutsy. And I'm thinking, you're telling me this?
Yeah.
Me, Mr. Almost Gets Fired Every Day? You're telling me this? Anyway, thanks very much to Hindus Field. Thanks for being with us. We got to take a break.
Thank you.
You're going to put that film strip guy on?
Yeah, I was an AV boy. In fifth grade, I became an AV boy. And I liked film strips because the technology was easy. And the thing is, like, I'm really not all that... Like, for example, I don't know how anything here works. I'm not really all that technologically adept.
Uh-huh.
Although I can learn. I can learn these things. I'm not unhandy. But it's not my immediate inclination is to grasp.
Yeah, but it's because you don't want to, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you
partly.
Just have other more important things to worry about, so you don't worry about all of this computer stuff in your digital...
Often when somebody's trying to explain something technological to me, I'm pondering existential themes in the work of Nathaniel Hawthorne or something.
Right.
So I don't really pay that much attention.
Exactly.
Well, anyway, this is actually true. When you were an AV boy in my school, you were paired up... You worked in teams. It was like Starsky and Hutch or something. You go in there with the backup.
This is really sad.
So I worked with my friend, the famous guitar player Tom Trabuzio. He and I were an AV boy team together. Tom was incredibly technologically adept. I mean, Tom could do...
In the fifth grade?
In the fifth grade, Tom could literally, and he did, he used to go around the neighborhood fixing people's radios and stuff like that. He could fix anything. You know, he's just one of those people who could do that. And so when Ms. Falcon explained to us how the movie projector worked, Tom understood it instantly, how to thread the film, you know, around all these little loops and things like that. Whereas, you know, it was just Sumerian cuneiform writing to me. I had no idea what she was talking about. But I had Tom with me, so, you know, how big a problem was it? So we would go together, and I would pull the screen down. That was my job. I'd pull the screen down that was over the blackboard or whatever, and Tom would set up the film projector. Except when we went to the auditorium, where the screen was way up in the rafters of the auditorium, and you had to take a nail with a stick on it and pull the screen down, grab the handle that way and pull the screen down.
Yeah.
And I hated doing that because I always felt the screen was going to come down and crush my little body.
Yeah.
So I hated that, but I didn't know how to do the other job. And then the worst part was, it was fine. I was a fraud, basically. I was masquerading as an AV boy. I really didn't know how to do the job.
That's pretty sad, you know. That's real sad.
Well, it kept sadder because one day Tom was like, I was sick or something.
Oh, no.
Or he was sick. And so then I was sent out as a team with somebody else. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Richard Emmel. Could have been Gary Tubman. I'm not really sure. But whoever it was, he didn't know how the projectors worked either. I think they were maybe breaking him in or something. It was like training day, and I was Denzel Washington.
The training.
So I knew how to take, like, graph and bribes and stuff like that, but I didn't really know how anything worked. So I just did the best I could and, you know, just threaded the thing.
That wasn't good enough.
No, we just turned on the movie, and you heard this sort of horrible grinding noise of film being eaten by the projector. Nervous reassurances from me that I could set things to right instantly, and it was bad. But yeah, it was my worst fear, and I had that. It wasn't like I was going blithely through life thinking I would never be exposed. I had been worrying for quite some time. What would happen if Tom Trabuzio weren't in school someday and I had to do this job myself? Well, we found out.
Did you ever think of learning the job while he was doing it, or you maybe pay attention, and so therefore when he was out, you
was
could just jump right in?
I was pulling the screen down. I don't know why I didn't learn. That's a good question. As I look back, I don't really have a good explanation for why I didn't learn it.
Not that it's ruined your life or anything, but maybe at that point...
I do have post-traumatic stress AV boy syndrome.
Yeah.
My hands do shake, and I have under certain situations, I can't urinate.
Let us all sing the praises of the pancreas. It has never been an organ of distinction. Though it functions day by day in a most convenient way, it has never had the glory that the liver gets. Let us all raise our glasses to the pancreas, just secreting alkaline digestive juices. Into the intestine just to neutralize the stomach acid that could be remaining on the food. Hey, pancreas! Hey, pancreas! You are my favorite organ. Hey, pancreas. Hey, pancreas. I can't think of anything that rhymes with organ. Pumping out from the lovely Isles of Langerhans comes the insulin that regulates the sugar in the blood. And that's why so high I rank it, and I'll drop a note to thank it. May you never have a cranky pancreas. Hey, pancreas. Hey, pancreas.
This is the genius. Haywood Banks, singing about the pancreas.
So we're going to talk to the operation guy now?
Well, that's what I'd been told. I'm still thrilled when something goes wrong with the show and it's not my fault, because it almost invariably is.
Yeah.
But this time,
did somebody screw up?
Somebody actually said that he wanted medical music and he was tired of his own medical music.
Uh-huh.
So I went out and got...
Right, so he's on right now then?
No, apparently he's not.
He's not on right now. Oh. When will he be on?
Later.
Later?
Later. So we'll find another song. Actually, I also brought in to the studio control room there, Bobby, experimental film, which I thought also kind of says webcast.
So the film guy's on now?
The film strip guy's on. He's way at the end of the show. The film strip thing is going to be great. I don't know. I mean, people don't remember this maybe, but I mean, Bruce and I grew up in the 20s and 30s, and they had these things called film strips, and it was like, where does toast come from and stuff? And they answered these kind of basic questions, and they were sort of cranked along there frame by frame with little sort of captions underneath. And it was just sort of
rudimentary, yeah.
It gave you information kind of at a speed at which you could absorb it, too. You know, they didn't. One thing about film strips is they didn't throw a lot of material at you. You know, it wasn't like CNN now where there's a crawl and there's a split frame and stuff like that, and then there's a webcast of Darren Kagan's spleen or something. It's not all this kind of stuff coming at you at once. It was just the film strip was a very orderly universe.
Odd you'd mentioned Darren Kagan. I said it's odd that you had mentioned.
I said, why is it odd?
Well, it's because you could have picked a number of different people, but you happen to pick that one.
I have an unwholesome fascination with
Darren Kagan. Yes, I know that. I mentioned it.
I know that. I understand that. I'm getting help.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, there is nothing wrong with it.
She's a very attractive woman. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
By the way, we have some further word for Buckingham Palace. Apparently, the security people of Buckingham Palace said that the problem was they really thought it was Batman, so they let him through.
I see.
The guy shows up and he says, excuse me, I'm Batman. I have a job to do here.
Fine.
What are they going to say? We're sorry, you can't. Well, they thought
he came to save the queen?
Yeah, exactly. He thought he'd been told that the Joker was trying to get the queen and see. Well, never mind. They just thought it was Batman, and that's all there was to it. And that's as long as they have an explanation of that kind, that's fine. Our numbers are 5.
Perhaps we need more superheroes in this country doing that kind of thing.
We don't need a super. Yeah, we do need a superhero. Our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. Star WTIC.
We talking guns today?
We can talk guns. We can talk typewriters.
Typewriters?
Well, I don't know the whole... I still haven't sort of figured out this, whether these memos that CBS used.
Oh, okay.
It's a CBS and Blade, though. I'm very proud right now. I still don't know whether these things are forgeries or not. I watched the CBS Evening News on Friday night when they sort of had their rebuttal on, and it was, fairly convincing, but then there's been some more reporting since then that makes CBS seem less convincing. I will say one thing, though, which is that I happen to be looking at a website. So for bloggers, this has been just a great topic because it's sort of something that they can really get into. It's some a sort of weird, dusty look
for pancreases.
Katie and Matt, Brian and Keith,
the good thing first, okay?
The good thing first.
Which is that I think, if I have to watch local news in this market, I'm inclined to watch Channel 30.
Yep.
Because, first of all, Channel 3, they mistreat their employees. Channel 8, I don't know why. I have no reason, except for Jeff Fox, who I kind of like. Like, I can't really think of any reason to watch Channel 8. And the Channel 61, they show the news at the wrong time. But Channel 30 has the Peckinpah, who I'm enormously fond of.
Mm-hmm.
Joanne Nessie, who we just love. She's like the nicest person in the world. I mean, yep. Joanne Nessie is even nicer than you think she is. And Jerry Brooks, Jerry gets it. I like Jerry,
yep.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Gets it enough to be a little bit depressed by it, which is key. And there's a bunch of other people there that I like, and they're good. All
yep.
right? The jingle's got to go. Really, if they play the jingle one more time, I'm going to go up on the roof. I'm going to wait until 12:01 tonight. I'm going to drive to whatever state I have to go to get one of the assault rifles, and I'm going up on the roof if I hear the jingle one more time.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
I love Channel 30. I think they do a great job.
They do.
My favorite news station.
You don't think the jingle kind of adds a little something?
No, the jingle is just driving me. If I have to hear about Katie and Matt and Brian and Keisha one more time, I'm going to lose my mind.
Okay.
I'm to pull the jingle. I'll get Hannah the folk singer to write them a better jingle. You know, at least a new jingle. Not a better jingle, but that jingle's been played too many times. And
so
I speak for many people here in Central Connecticut.
So it's not the quality of the jingle.
It's the quality of the jingle. It's been on too many times.
It's the overexposure of that particular jingle.
Yeah.
This jingle here.
I think I liked the jingle the first time I heard it, but that was a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
I would be happier.
Unfortunately, see, what happens with this is, though, you're here all the time. You hear it every time it plays.
Right.
People listening, they don't, you know, they only listen to the show for probably about 12 and a half
they're
seconds.
Tired.
And then they're, like, gone.
They're tired.
And so, therefore, they don't get exposed to it as much. So, therefore, the client would play it over and over again to expose more people to it. That would be the...
It's time for a new job.
That would be the attitude.
Great. They're a terrific news operation. I don't watch a lot of local news, but if I were going to watch local news, that's what I would
watch.
That
would be where you'd watch. Sure.
That's where you put your
money. I would agree with that.
I mean, there's some good people at the other stations, too. You know, it's not that I don't...
Good cop.
No, there's good people at Channel... I like the Elf, and I like Dennis, and there's people like that. I like the people at Channel 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like Jeff Fox.
Al, of course.
And Al. Great.
Like
Jeff Fox, I like at Channel 8. Keith Coons, very short, but I like him.
I'm not sure Keith is that short.
Is he a little person?
I don't think he's that little.
You're my...
When I saw him, he looked smaller than what I thought he would, and I stupidly said the word diminutive.
And they also have some other people there that I like, too. I don't really know who they are. But, I mean, that's a fine news operation, and then...
Gee, that sounds like, let's just make it up as we go along. You don't know who
like
they are?
No, I don't know who they are. They're fine.
Well,
they do a great job. But Channel 30 first, they've got to get rid of the jingle. And really, the mental health of the whole state of Connecticut is going to improve if the jingle gets changed. And really, they could afford, Hannah the folk singer and her friend there would bang something out for them, you know, for $250.
Well, how do you know that?
I'm spitballing.
$250, huh?
For $250, they can get a new jingle.
Si 35 me fait les yeux doux, c'est un vertige que j'ai souvent.
Well, we have an update. According to British officials, the man up on the side of Buckingham Palace today turned out to be Manny Ramirez, who took a wrong turn running a triple. It's time for Sports at Five, the very French sports discussion segment. I think Mr. Ambrosio, Monsieur Bruce Stevens, and myself, Louis Gascon.
You forget how many outs there were?
That was a nice move by the man.
Oh,
street.
Go back.
All right, we have a very interesting Ask Mr. Ambrosio.
The Institute ready for the fall semester now, by the way.
Dear Mr. Ambrosio, my question concerns chameleons and other lizards.
Chameleons.
And other lizards, such as the animals, and they change color according to their surroundings.
Right.
Can a blind lizard do that? In other words, if a chameleon is blind, would it know what color to change?
Yes, in fact, a blind chameleon will go through two or three different color changes trying to find what the correct color is for that surrounding. A blind chameleon has sharper senses than a regular chameleon. So let's say it's in a very area with lots of vegetation, and it should be green. It will go from black to brown to yellow to green to get to that point.
Yeah.
Its senses are so sharpened by the fact that it doesn't have sight. Other chameleons in the Northwest, they have problems with it because of the constant rainfall. One way to get rid of chameleons, the easiest way to get rid of a chameleon is by drowning it.
Yeah.
And in the Pacific Northwest, chameleons there have a hard time ascertaining what the correct color to be in. Northeast chameleons have trouble in the snow.
Yeah.
They have a real hard time in the winter. Now, summertime, they zap into that color right away. But yes, blind chameleons have a time finding the color, and they will go through different colors because their senses, much like the Institute,
but they will find it. They will find it.
Eventually, yes.
Say, I am your president, I am your leader, and here is what our country is doing to make the world a safer place.
I mean, this is the thing. Unfortunately, today, Kerry and Bush, over the last sort of 36 hours, have spent, you know, the last 36 hours kind of sparring about who has less of a nuclear policy, less of a North Korea policy. Oh, no, you've got much less of a North Korea policy than I do. I have some kind of North Korea policy, but neither one of them has really articulated anything very well that I've seen anyway. I mean, maybe I missed it, but, you know, if either one of them has a clear and coherent message to the American people about North Korea, I've missed it.
All right, well, hopefully they'll come up with one. Thank you very much, Paul.
And basically, I think actually what you do is you respond. You say, all right, we want to get some kind of engagement with you, and we want you to be stepping down and submitting to inspections and stuff like that, and then we'll send you a bunch of crap, you know, a bunch of American crap and money and stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, it's not a complicated situation there at all. I mean, the guy who runs the place is nuts, but basically they don't have anything. They're starving to death. And about the only thing they can think of to do is to become incredibly dangerous. But I don't think, I mean, I think, you know, you could probably work with them. And that probably makes, and there's not, what you can't militarily intervene there at the tinderbox. So what else can you do?
On NBC 30.
For the parts of the brain you didn't kill in college. WTIC News Talk 1080.
Nothing is more beautiful.
I'm taking note of the facts. I mean, yeah, I understand that in the old days, there were almost no press releases from Governor Rowland. There was just the occasional, you know, televised announcement, assimilate or be destroyed. But whereas now there's kind of a sense of that something is going on, that there's a steady hand on the tiller, that there's a plan every day, and that at the end of every day, we total up what we've done, and we make it clear to the public that we've been doing something.
Well, I don't know. That seems like a pretty good plan to me.
I think it is a good plan. I'm just taking note of it. I'm not casting asparagus on it. I'm not being evaluative of it anyway. And now, ladies and gentlemen, joining us live in the minute or so that we have left is special movie correspondent Lillian the Puppet Lady. Hello, Puppet Lady.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Hi. I saw two movies, one I liked and one I really hated. I hated Ron Burgundy.
Oh, yeah, I know. I can't see you liking that movie.
No, but I did like Open Water.
Open Water, where the people just sitting there in the water and the sharks are nibbling at their hinies?
Well, I didn't hear what you said. I have static on my line.
Okay.
Well, but anyway, I mean, I liked it.
Well.
I'll never forget it. And they said it was like Blair Witch, but it wasn't. It was much better.
It was much better because it was why? Why was it so much better?
I don't know, because it was more professionally done.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot better. And I'm wondering what happened to Geets.
I wonder what happened to Geets every day I wake up. If anybody knows where Geets is or can get him back for us, please get him back.
Okay.
So, what movie are you going to see next?
I don't even know yet.
Oh, but I think you need to see a romantic one.
Yeah, maybe I will.
Something romantic, something a little sexy, don't you think?
Ha, ha, ha.
Pick one of the puppets.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, I love you.
I miss you.
I miss you, too. I love you, too.
Goodbye. Goodbye. She's a fascinating, mysterious temptress with you, that puppet lady. I can't get her out of my head.